Good morning. So thankful for everyone here and for everyone also participating with us this morning online. It's a special thing and a good thing for us to assemble and to be together, either virtually or physically, to obey what God has called us to do, to assemble and to not neglect meeting together. There's a lot going on right now, out there and in here. There's a lot more going on than we realize. And before we get into the lesson, I want to just say that we're going to be okay because we're God's people and we are built on the rock, and it is a solid rock, and it's going to be okay no matter what's going on. This year is a time of testing, a testing of what is reliable. And we see that there are so many things in this world that appear consistent and reliable, but they change and they shake and they crack, whether it be government, whether it be our own physical health, whether it be friendships and things of these nature, they shake and they crack and they change and they decay, but God does not. And the foundation that we are built on is Him. And so before we get into this lesson, I would like to read to you a passage from Hebrews to, I think, set our minds in the right framework. And it's Hebrews 10, 38 and 39. But my righteous one shall live by faith, and if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. And verse 39 in particular is what I want to call to mind. But we are not of those who shrink back and are destroyed, but of those who have faith and preserve their souls. So before we get into this lesson, I would like us to say together that looking at everything around us, everything going on, examining it all, knowing that we're built on the rock, that we are with God as His church, that we're not going to shrink back. We're going to live by faith. We're going to be full of His love. We're going to be obedient to Him no matter what happens to us or around us. We've made a decision to follow Him, whether it be to still waters and green pastures or whether it be through the valley of the shadow of death. We're going to stay with our shepherd no matter what. So if you would say with me, I will not shrink back. I will not shrink back. Say it one more time. I will not shrink back. Our words are powerful because we are made in the image of God, who made this entire universe with words, and the things we say matter. And so saying these things, I will not shrink back, let that sink in deep and be a conviction you never waver in as we follow and obey what God has called us to. This morning's lesson is about marriage and God's design for marriage. And this is an important teaching because as we see in Hebrews 13:4, that we are to hold marriage in honor. Not just those who are married are to honor marriage, but all of us are to honor marriage, and marriage is honorable. And the reason, again, that I am speaking on this morning is in our current situation we find ourselves since March in particular. We're at home a lot more, or people at least seem to be at home a lot more in our society. And whatever was going on in home has been amplified. If things were really good at home, then well, now they're probably great. If things were bad at home, things are probably worse. And so there's an amplification of our home condition from this test that we're all going through right now. And so it's important for us to look at, well, how is this supposed to function, this thing that is marriage? Who came up with it, and how is it supposed to work? And so we're going to be looking at God's design for marriage this morning and revisit how does He want this relationship to function? What are we to be holding in honor that is marriage? Marriage is very similar to a language. When we're born and we're raised in our childhood, we didn't choose the language that we spoke. We spoke the language of our parents. And in the same way, the way that we function in a marriage is by default, we have a desire to function the way we saw our parents function in their marriage. And so that can be a good thing or a bad thing. Some of us grew up with good parental examples of marriage. Some of us grew up with bad examples. Some of us grew up with a mix of good and bad examples. But as many of us know, the English language is a complicated language, and there's certain rules and words and phrases that really don't make sense. And if people have to learn English as a second language, they just want to pull their hair out half the time because it's just so bonkers. But just recognizing that a language is a little ridiculous doesn't give you a new language to then speak. And so for us who grew up perhaps with experiencing a negative example of marriage, just identifying, well, that's not good, that doesn't automatically give you then a good example then of marriage. And so, and regardless of our upbringings, we need to be revisiting, looking at God's design for how does he want this relationship that he created to be lived out. So we're making sure that our default language of marriage is God's design and not from our own understanding. Our first passage we're going to look on this topic is 1 Peter 3:7. It says, "Likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered." So we're going to unpackage some of this here now. The first thing I want to highlight is to live with our wives in an understanding way. I think this is intentionally a subjective term of an understanding way. And that's because, and this is not a joke, that women are sometimes hard to understand. And that it takes time to intentionally think and strategize, okay, what's going on? What does she need? What are her desires? And women are all different and they're always changing. And so and that's okay. But the important part of this is that men have an intentionality of seeking to understand and seeking to then, as we see, show honor. Now, this idea of weaker vessel, that might be a very uncomfortable term, especially in today's current political climate. But all this is speaking of is typically men are physically and biologically larger. And with that large frame and physical strength, there's a temptation to have might make right. And that is not an acceptable format for marriage. And with that increased size and strength, typically, there is a call to show honor in that. And with that strength, to lift up instead of put down, and to provide, and not just provide financially, of course, but provide a quality of life, a life of honor. And then the point of this verse that is key to this lesson is that your prayers may not be hindered. And this is why this is such an important topic, because this isn't just going to make your home life more comfortable or more wholesome or more enjoyable. We're talking about your connection to God, and that this marital relationship directly influences your connection to God. And that is how important of a subject that this is that we're discussing this morning. So this isn't just wanting your homes to be more pleasant. This is for us to have a better connection to our Father, and making sure that our connection to our spouse is by his design is going to not hinder our prayers to God. So this is a very big deal. Next up in our series of passages we're going to look at this morning that I think are very important for us to understand is Matthew 19, 10 through 13. This is a passage that is not often discussed, but very important, especially to this subject. The context here is Jesus just got done teaching on divorce and the high standards of marriage and the repercussions of that relationship going sour. And the disciples then, after hearing Jesus teach on this, had a misconception that that marriage in its entirety was more of a snare than a blessing. And Jesus, though, teaches here that marriage is not for everyone, and that's okay. So let's read through this together. The disciples said to him, "If such is the case of a man with his wife, it's better to not marry." But he said to them, "Not everyone can receive this saying," the saying that it's better not to marry, "but only those to whom it is given. For there are eunuchs who have been so from birth, and there are eunuchs who have been made eunuchs by men, and there are eunuchs who have been made themselves eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. Let the one who is able to receive this receive it." So by calamity or choice, it's better for some not to marry. And what's important for us to take away from this is that you don't need to be married to be spiritual, that a single life is not less fruitful in the kingdom. It's not, you're not a second class Christian if you don't have a spouse. And there's kind of this unspoken expectation in our culture that if you're not with somebody, then you're messed up. And there's this natural progression that gets insisted upon on people where it's like, if you're single, somebody will ask you, "Hey, are you seeing anybody? Anybody on your radar?" And then if you're in a relationship with somebody, it's like, "Hey, when are you guys going to get married?" And then when you're married, people are like, "Well, when are you going to have kids?" There's always this progression of people inquisitive about you. And none of those things are required for you to be faithful to God. And there is a potential that marriage can become an idol where we think, "I can't live unless I have this thing. I need this or else I will not be able to be fruitful or to function or to be fulfilled." And if we're looking for fulfillment, anything outside of God, then we've gone horribly out of bounds. Now, the Apostle Paul talks a lot about his own personal journey and experience in this matter where he remained single. And there's a lot of strengths and weaknesses to either being married or single, but one is not better than the other. And that is my point in bringing this this passage to mind. And in a similar vein of having children, this is something I really wrestled with for years is Annie and I struggled for years to have children. And I was really comforted by a passage in Isaiah 56, verse 5, where God says, "I'm going to give you something better than children." And where did marriage and having children come from? It comes from God. And we're going to go be with our Lord forever. He's the giver of all good gifts. And we can imagine just how wonderful it is to have a spouse and to have children. We can recognize, wow, those are really blessed things. Those are good things. We're serving and going to be with the one who made those things. And God didn't max out his blessing capacity in creating marriage and creating children. We're going to be with the one who made those things. And so who's to say he's not going to make something even better for us to experience, in eternity? Of course, his presence and being with him forever will be more than we can ask or imagine. So marriage is beautiful. It's a good thing, but we serve the source of all good things as Christians. So now we're going to get to the passage that Jason read for us, and this is our main passage of this morning's lesson, Mark 10, verses 6 through 9. "But from the beginning of creation, God made them male and female. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let not man separate." So I want to again emphasize that marriage is not something we as humans came up with. It is something God designed. It's something he constructed. And it's also the most beautiful part of creation. You look at the 6 days of creation, and everything God makes is increasing in its sophistication, in its beauty, and in the progression of this world. It's becoming more and more complete. And the very last thing God makes is marriage. And so marriage is truly a beautiful creation of God. It's something God himself causes to happen. It's not just two people agreeing to put rings on for their lifetime. God is involved in this union of connecting two people, two souls into one flesh. And it is a very special, precious, and exclusive type of relationship. But it is also the work of God. Now, Jesus calls back to this constant thread throughout Scripture of this passage and this idea of a man leaving his father and mother, holding fast to his wife, and becoming one flesh. And so those are three essential aspects of marriage and are going to be the three main points this morning. So the first one is that a man shall leave his father and mother, and that there's an idea of leaving the nest, if you will. And from that leaving, there comes boundaries. You don't go back. Many of us who have experienced leaving home, leaving your father and mother, and then if you come back and stay an extended period of time after you've already left, it's really kind of constricting. It's hard to be back. And that's a good thing, because you don't want to live in your parents' basement for till you're 30. You know, that's not good. There's an importance, there's a healthy importance to transitioning from childhood to adulthood. And so, and you don't want to backtrack. As you leave your parents' house, there needs to be emotionally and financially and spiritual independence. And if you still have dependence on parents and you bring that dependence into a marriage, you're crossing a boundary that's going to be detrimental to that relationship. Now, it doesn't mean you can't have a great connection to your parents or in-laws as a married person, but there needs to be clear boundaries of how connected you are to them. And really, it comes down to dependence, that you need to be independent emotionally, financially, and spiritually from your parents and from your in-laws. Also, there's this important identity of you've left your family, you are now your own unit. And as a marriage, you have now created a new family unit between the two of you, and that there's no children needed for that unit to exist. That's a misconception that I hear every now and then, that, you know, oh, we're going to start a family. Well, the family's already started in a unit of two. Children just get added to the family. I've told this story a couple times to some of you, and it always makes me laugh, and I might make my parents squirm, and sorry about that. But quite a few years ago now, when I was 21, and I came back to Alaska after I'd been gone for several years, and I came back to visit for Christmas. And all four of my younger siblings were still in the home. My two nieces were living with my parents, and I'm only home for a few weeks, and everybody has a stocking on the wall except for me. And I asked my parents, why don't I have a stocking? I had some gifts under the tree and stuff, and I got gifts for people, but for some reason I didn't have a stocking. And I asked, why don't I have a stocking? And my parents' response was, well, because you don't live in this house. You're not part of this family anymore. You're a relative now, and you're your own man. Ouch. And so it took me a couple days to kind of really digest that. But it was also, and I have a great connection to my parents, and I love them dearly. And it's something we still joke about, you know, to this day, that instance. But it was good to have that identity of, I have left my father and mother. It doesn't mean I don't love them, but I have left them. And again, you cannot have dependency. It doesn't mean you need to have complete disconnection, but you need to have independency from your childhood family as you begin a new family with your spouse. The idea of a man leaving your father and mother is really essential. It's not a child leaving your father and mother. That a person must reach a certain level of maturity and fulfillment to bring that into another connection. In a marriage, it can't be two halves making a whole. It needs to be two whole people fulfilled by God coming together to be connected. Otherwise, you're going to be addicted to this person. You're going to be dependent on this person, and that is not a healthy connection at all. when we were in South Africa working with the missionaries there, they had us write a list of all the qualities we were looking for in a potential spouse. And I was very thorough. I wrote down 2 pages, line by line, of all these characteristics that I considered necessary in a potential spouse of mine. And as I was writing this very thorough list, one of my teammates looked over my shoulder and said, "Wow, Mike, that's quite the list." "Oh, thank you very much. It is." And she then asked me a question. She said, "Mike, what type of man would this woman you're describing marry? And are you that man?" No. I was describing somebody way out of my league. Way out of my league. So I had 2 options. I could either lower my standards, or I could mature and grow and become more disciplined and to then be what the person that I'm looking for is looking for. And several years down the road on that journey of maturing more and God teaching me many things through life and through his word, I ended up meeting Annie. And Annie has met everything on that list and more. And the reason I mention that is this passage says a man leaves his father and mother. And so as someone begins or goes or is in this relationship, you need to make sure that you are fulfilled by God. You are a complete person, and then you're bringing that into this relationship. You're not just looking for the perfect person out there to then bring out the best in you, hopefully, and live happily ever after, like a Disney fairy tale. But we need to be whole people fulfilled by God, and then bring that into this connection, into this dynamic. So the next essential one of the 3 parts of marriage is to hold fast to your wife or hold fast to your spouse. And this is the necessity of relationship within marriage. That your spouse is your go-to person. The mission teams that have come up here, we have a rule for them in that they can't be in a relationship with somebody else for the first 8 months that they're up here. So if they had a boyfriend or girlfriend or someone they're really interested in somewhere else or here, they have to put that on hold so that they can experience being here, be challenged here, be grown here, because if there's a connection far away, then when problems or difficulties arise here, they're going to want to take all that emotion, take that difficulty that they're facing, and they're going to bring it in front of somebody who's probably thousands of miles away from here, and it disconnects them from resolving things in their immediate surrounding, and it helps them get more integrated into this place instead of being connected to someone far, far away. And in a similar way, in a marriage, there is a necessity to hold fast to your spouse, and that when you find yourself on shaky ground, you don't run to somebody else other than your spouse, but that they are your go-to person. We're building our house right now. We're working on the roof, and we're putting this metal roofing on, and everything's icy and slick, and that metal roofing is slick as well. And we're up there and doing things, and man, when my foot slips or hand slips a little bit, I grab the closest thing I can as fast as I can. I hang on very tight. I hold fast to that thing next to me. And so our spouse needs to be that person that we go to first when we find things shaking us, that they are the first human being that we connect to. Obviously, God is our rock and our source and our true confidant. But in terms of relationship, human relationships, we have to go to our spouse first, and cannot take our struggles, our trials, our concerns to somebody outside of this relationship. There's a need to invest in that. And this relationship, you know, quality of time comes from quantity of time. And so we need to make sure that we allocate enough time to build that relationship. Trust is easily broke down, but takes a long time to build up. So building that trust through quantity of time is essential. Who here has ever read the 5 love language book? get about a third of you. It's an excellent book. It's pretty simple and straightforward, and I think it's very accurate and practical in recognizing that people, they express love and receive love in five different ways. That's acts of service, gift giving, words of affirmation, quality time, and physical touch. And this is going back to living with your wife in an understanding way, or really living with your spouse in an understanding way, is that you know how they receive love, and you love them in the way that they can understand is loving. This is not doctrine, but just a practical advice. What I do with premarital counseling and things is I have the young couple write out 20 different activities they like to do as an individual, different hobbies or interests, activities and things like that. And then they each write their own list of 20, and then they try to find five that they both share. And then they focus on doing those things together. In a similar thing, it's a good kind of, this is just a starting point. By no means this is something that is doctrine, just practical goodness. And that is, every 2 weeks, go out for an evening. Every 2 months, go out for a weekend. And every 2 years, go on a two-week vacation or adventure together. And the whole point of that is to make sure that we're investing in this relationship, that we're holding fast. We're not just casual and flippant about this very special person in our lives. And then our last of the three points here is this idea of becoming one flesh and this exclusive intimacy that is inside of a marriage, within a marriage. And this is an emotional intimacy and, of course, a sexual intimacy, and is so important in marriage. Society has two main perspectives on sexuality, and both of them are horribly evil. One of them is that as long as it's consensual with anyone, anywhere, anytime, is totally cool and permissible, and there's no consequences, and it's just free love. Totally out of bounds from what Scripture describes. The other extreme, which is equally evil, is that sex gets right lumped into, like, that it's in itself sinful, and it's, you know, I heard it when I was really young, but you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll was kind of like this one package deal. And that is kind of, it's come from like a Catholic type idea of the carnal nature, and that sexuality is in itself an ungodly thing. And that is not true at all. So both those viewpoints are totally contradicting what we have in Scripture, because again, marriage is something God designed, and He made things very good. What we do need to do is make sure we look at what's His design for marriage, not letting the world define for us what is good and what is bad. 1 Corinthians 7:5 talks about how couples need to be connected intimately together, and that if they are to neglect this type of intimacy, they are providing Satan with an additional opportunities to tempt them. And so it is so important on a spiritual level for married couples to be connected in this way. And all of this, all three of these, are totally influenced by God. God is the center of this relationship. He's the one that created it. He's the one that is binding it together. And so the triangle being the strongest shape, I find symbolically important that this marriage has these three main points to it, that without one of them, this is not you can't have a marriage if one of these is missing. And it's within this relationship that God designed is the right place for children to thrive and grow up. It's in this type of connection that children are designed to develop. And all of this is by God's design. And Satan desires to pervert this and twist this on every level. He wants you to have no boundaries. He wants you to have all sorts of different improper relationships. He wants your intimacy to be non-existent in the right places and totally exist in all the wrong places. And he wants God not to be in the center at all. So totally out of whack from God's design. And so in conclusion for this lesson for you, this idea of marriage is not just something we're to honor just for those who are married, but all Christians, we are to honor this thing that God designed. We're in a pretty challenging time with the amount of time that we're being forced to spend together. And it's the right time to make the right choices, to have the right kind of connection. And that we can, there's no time like the present to be faithful and to not shrink back from things that are difficult. Marriage can be a very difficult relationship. And one of the things that is so refining about it is that when you have the mentality of, we're in this for the long run, you then develop conflict resolution skills, which are very useful in every part of life. And on that point, we hate conflict resolution, as humans, especially in our culture. But when you refuse to let divorce be something you joke about, you know, that's just some advice, is that don't ever joke about divorce. There's nothing funny about it. I like a good joke. Divorce jokes aren't funny, because divorce isn't funny. So in your relationship, don't even joke about divorce, because when you know, man, we have to work this out because we're in this for the long run together, that generates conflict resolution skills. Let me just give you one conflict resolution skill, and that is avoid at all costs using absolute terms like never or always. Those should really have no place in your conversations with your spouse. If you say, you are never home on time, that is a very, very dangerous thing to say, because one, it's a lie. They might very routinely be late, but to say that you are never there, you are, once a lie, because they're going to be sometimes on time, but you are then judging their and declaring their character instead of being uncomfortable with their behavior. And so words like never or always, those type of absolute terms have no real place and purpose within a marriage. So some simple practical advice: don't joke about divorce, don't use absolute terms. And let's make sure that in this time when we're being amplified, let's make sure that we're following the design that God has for this relationship. And whether, if we're single, let's know that it's okay to be single, that you're not less fruitful if you're single. You're not less of a person or Christian if you're single. And that if you are married, we are to follow God's design for this, not just what we think or what we grew up with for how this is supposed to be. So our goal as Christians is to embrace Jesus' teachings and to spread them around the world, to teach them to observe all the things he commanded us. And one of the things he has taught us very clearly is how we are to honor marriage and how we are to be married as married people, and that being single is not a lesser form of living. So with these things in mind, if there's anything that we can help with or pray with, either online, if you can contact us, we can help you with anything. Or if there's anybody here that has needs that we can assist with, please come forward while we stand and sing.